Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Today is primary or caucus day in three more states, but the biggest campaign news may be coming today from President Obama. Last night, he gave in to political reality and authorized wealthy supporters to begin donating money to his most important super PAC, Priorities USA. That means we will be hearing more and more ads like this.
Governor Romney, you're campaigning as the man who can fix the economy. Let's look at your record, sir. You bought Dade International. Two U.S. plants were closed. 2,000 workers were laid off.
No, they're not.
Of course they are. Everything corporations earn ultimately goes to the people. Where do you think it goes?
Upper income Wall Street.
Here with Romney.
Is Romney.
Don't try and stop the foreclosure process. Let it hit the bottom.
Let Detroit go bankrupt. Bankrupt.
When you were governor, Massachusetts ranked 47th in job growth.
It's not a very pretty picture, is it?
A negative ad funded by the pro-Obama Priorities USA. The president is actually not a fan of these so-called independent super PACs, made more important by the Citizens United Supreme Court decision, which he disdains. But Republican super PACs are raising so much more money than the pro-Obama one so far that he apparently felt he couldn't run for re-election with one hand tied behind his political back. Now, this week's New Yorker has a profile of Mitt Romney's negative attack ad guru, best known for the infamous Willie Horton attack ad in 1988, which we'll hear in a minute, and his ties to super PAC money. Jane Mayer joins us now to talk about the central reality of the 2012 race. Hi, Jane. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
And all campaigns these days have their negative ad men, but the Romney campaign has the undisputed genius of the field, the Steve Jobs of attack ads, Larry McCarthy. Who is Larry McCarthy?
Well, he's somebody who's been at this game for a very long time. He's very controversial because he's made some of the ads that have been considered the dirtiest in the business, beginning with that Willie Horton ad that you mentioned, which helped knock out Dukakis, the Democratic nominee in 1988, with an ad that was infamous in part because it was an inflammatory wedge issue kind of ad that played on crime and particularly looked at one case involving a man named Willie Horton who had committed rape while he was out being furloughed by in Massachusetts. And he was a black convict, and it created all kinds of racial backlash. So it's considered an ad that kind of was hit below the belt.
Let me play just the audio, obviously, since this is radio, of that spot, and then we'll talk more about its significance then and now.
Bush and Dukakis on crime. Bush supports the death penalty for first-degree murderers. Dukakis not only opposes the death penalty, he allowed first-degree murderers to have weekend passes from prison. One was Willie Horton, who murdered a boy in a robbery, stabbing him 19 times. Despite a life sentence, Horton received 10 weekend passes from prison. Horton fled, kidnapped a young couple, stabbing the man and repeatedly raping his girlfriend. Weekend prison passes. Dukakis on crime.
Now, that was just audio of that 1988 campaign commercial. We have put on our website a Larry McCarthy screening room to accompany this conversation. So if you want to watch the full videos of some of his most famous or infamous, take your pick, campaign commercials, you can go to WNYC.org and click on Brian Lehrer Show. You will see that Willie Horton ad from 1988, one that he did for Mitch McConnell when he was first running for the Kentucky Senate seat in 1984. Ashley's story, which we'll hear the audio of in a minute, done for the Bush 2004 campaign. An ad against a Democratic congressman in Iowa in 2010 that was pegged to the Ground Zero Mosque, quote unquote, here in Manhattan, and one for Romney, the Gingrich baggage ad being used in this year's campaign. So if you want to see that Larry McCarthy screening room, it's at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. And Jane, what the listeners couldn't hear as we played the audio of the Willie Horton ad was, as you were indicating, a very scary-looking, mean-looking mugshot of Willie Horton, who was a black man. And exploiting the image of a quote-unquote scary black man was deemed racist and beyond the pale after that campaign, even by Bush's own campaign manager, Lee Atwater, on his deathbed. Why did Lee Atwater distance himself from an ad that he himself had approved?
At that point, he was dying of brain cancer, and he was apologetic for how he had behaved, basically. He thought he admitted it seemed racist and mean-spirited and divisive. And I mean, the ad, a part of what you have to know also is what the ad didn't say. And this is one of the things that when political ads mislead, often what they do is they'll have some tiny little fragment of a fact that's right, but they take it out of context. And what that ad didn't say was this program, this furlough program, was not a program that Dukakis had invented. It was set up by his Republican predecessor. And the Willie Horton story had taken place 12 years before he was running for president, and the furlough program was similar to furlough programs in 45 of the 50 states and a national program that had been set up by Reagan.
So, though my understanding is that the Massachusetts legislature did pass a bill to end that furlough program for people convicted of serious violent crimes like Willie Horton had been, and Dukakis vetoed it.
That's right, 12 years before. And so that gave them the ability to isolate this as an issue. But as an issue, I mean, it was such a it's such a remote issue, really, in the scheme of things for what was going on in 1988 in the fight that Dukakis was in. It was a piece of ancient history that they elevated. And what's interesting about that also is that it became enough of an issue that there was a federal elections commission investigation into that ad, and Larry McCarthy was deposed for it. So he had to give a certain amount of testimony about it. And in it, he talks in kind of very upfront ways about how he saw the power of this image as something that would really move voters. And he particularly thinks that crime and economic issues are things that galvanize voters. And he also knew that mugshot of Horton was going to be inflammatory enough that he decided they shouldn't show it to the stations when they were going to try to get approval to put the ad on the air. He withheld the mugshot version of the ad. And then later, after it was approved for being aired by the stations, he sent a second version, which he said just had a correction in it. And they didn't look at it carefully. He knew it would get by the station managers and get on the air that way.
Wow. So the image wasn't in, and I know this is in your article, the image wasn't in the spot as it was screened by television station officials to approve the ad, and then it was slipped in. Jane Mayer, reporter, staff writer for The New Yorker, on her article on Larry McCarthy, the negative ad guru, creator of the Willie Horton ad in 1988, now centrally involved in the pro-Romney Restore Our Future super PAC. And I guess we should also mention, before we get off Willie Horton, that what was groundbreaking about that ad was not just its contents, but its production by so-called independent money, right?
Really, and there's a long history of this. Everybody's paying attention right now to the super PAC issue as if it were brand new. In fact, it goes way back. Its roots are almost as soon as the campaign finance rules were passed to try to keep corruption out of politics after Watergate. There began to spring up these outside groups that would pool their money and put on negative ads. And there have been various kinds of restrictions on how much they could spend until 2010. That's what's changed is now they can spend as much as they want.
And wasn't it Larry McCarthy's partner in making Willie Horton who was a plaintiff in Citizens United?
It was indeed Floyd Brown. And so it's this, in effect, if you look at the history, it's so interesting. It's this small group of people that have been involved from the start, and they've been making really controversial ads that push the envelope all the way through. They've been considered sort of the dirty players in some ways in politics. And I thought it was interesting that they're now working so closely with the people pushing Romney, because Romney portrays himself as an outsider to Washington, but actually he's relying on a number of very experienced insiders to push him.
So there's a straight line from the Willie Horton ad through Citizens United to the Romney campaign, with Larry McCarthy masterminding the TV spots. Even though it's not officially part of the Romney campaign, it's the pro-Romney independent PAC, quote unquote. And in this Republican primary season, Romney has creamed Gingrich and sometimes Santorum with massive spending on attack ads. So here's one that was very effective in Iowa, made by Larry McCarthy, that focused on Gingrich having too much baggage, showing comical scenes of old and tattered luggage, while you hear this.
Know what makes Barack Obama happy? Newt Gingrich's baggage. Newt has more baggage than the airlines. Freddie Mac helped cause the economic collapse, but Gingrich cashed in. Gingrich not only teamed up with Nancy Pelosi on global warming, but together they co-sponsored a bill that gave $60 million a year to a UN program supporting China's brutal one-child policy. As Speaker, Gingrich even supported taxpayer funding of some abortions. And Newt is the only Speaker in history to be reprimanded. He was fined $300,000 for ethics violations by a Republican Congress. Newt Gingrich, too much baggage. Restore Our Future is responsible for the content of this message.
Restore Our Future is the name of the pro-Romney PAC. Is that so bad? Gingrich does have a lot of baggage.
He has a lot of baggage, and in fact, it's a very effective ad, as are most of Larry McCarthy's ads. And it's almost kind of funny when you see the ads tumble down the baggage carousel and explode open.
Yep.
With, you know, the skeletons in the closet. But is it bad? Well, there's one piece of it that's completely false, and I think that's bad. The accusation that Nancy Pelosi and Gingrich teamed up together to fund a UN program that promoted China's brutal one-child policy. They did not. In fact, the legislation that they teamed up on specifically said none of that money could go towards abortions or any of the other one-child policies that China has. So it was beyond misleading. It was completely false, and the nonpartisan group PolitiFacts gave it its lowest rating, saying it was basically pants on fire, a big lie.
Do you think they win, by the way, by just the fact that you and I are sitting here now having this conversation, even pointing to the inaccuracies, the pants on fire rating for an ad like that, because it gets out?
Well, you know, was it Mark Twain who said that, you know, a lie goes around the world before the truth can even pull on its pants or shoes? You know, lies move fast. And it's hard to, for the facts to catch up with them.
Now, you write in your article that, unsurprisingly, you put it, liberal donors have not been racing to write big checks to super PACs this year, while Republican donors have. Why the difference, in your opinion?
Well, I think there are a number of factors that have made it hard for Obama to get the really huge donors. I mean, to begin with, there's an inequality in the two parties in terms of their bases. There are many more mega rich in the Republican Party, and especially if you include corporate money, which the Citizens United decision allowed, you're beginning with kind of an imbalance. I mean, so there's that, and then Obama has been a critic of big money in politics, which doesn't make liberals with big money feel very good about writing checks. And then, in some ways, he's alienated some of the people with the biggest bucks. He's been critical of Wall Street, and that's where some of his big money came from in 2008. And he's also disappointed some of the more liberal members of his base who are wealthy, like George Soros, who recently said that he seems almost like Romney to Soros.
So how significant, then, do you think the news is about President Obama encouraging supportive donors to give to his favorite super PAC last night? That was considered something of a turnaround, and it's big news today.
I think it's very important news. I think it's an acknowledgement of the new landscape of politics this year. In 2012, the presidential race is the year of unlimited, humongous money, and you can't compete without it. And it's really changing the face of presidential politics, these super PACs are.
And here's another example of a super PAC ad being produced in support of the Obama campaign. Again, it's an attack ad with Mitt Romney as the target.
Mitt Romney may have no experience fighting terror, but he does have some experience with foreign countries, sending our jobs to them. As governor of Massachusetts, Romney vetoed a law that would have prevented outsourcing and stopped taxpayer money from funding jobs outside the U.S. Sending taxpayer money abroad? Outsourcing jobs to foreign workers? That's not the kind of international experience we can afford.
So, listeners, get ready for more ads like that and more ads like the Romney spots that we've been playing and others produced by Larry McCarthy and people like him in this year of the first presidential election since the Citizens United ruling. We are talking to Jane Mayer, New Yorker staff writer, who's got a big article about that in this week's issue, including a profile of Larry McCarthy, the genius of the negative ad, who's working for the Romney PAC. Let me take a call, Jane, from Keith in Washington Heights, who wants to defend, and this is a debate that people were having 24 years ago during the 1988 campaign, but we'll reprise it a little bit with Keith in Washington Heights, who wants to defend the Willie Horton ad. Hi, Keith. Thanks for calling. You're on WNYC.
You know, your guest, Ms. Mayer, makes it sound like, oh, it's obviously racist and so obviously unfair. And there, it was a perfectly legitimate ad. If Willie Horton is black, that does not mean that no one's allowed to mention what happened. Okay? Ms. Mayer was trying to hide the fact that Dukakis had vetoed, which you did bring up, Ryan, what the Massachusetts state legislature, when they tried to get rid of the furlough program, and he vetoed it. She tried to make it sound like it was the fault of Dukakis' predecessor. It is not the fault of the ad maker that Willie Horton happens to be black. Dukakis was soft on crime, and giving a violent criminal free passes on weekends, it's a really bad idea. I noticed that we're focusing exclusively on Republican ads. No one's mentioning things like the Daisy ad. It's only very one way around here with this.
Wait a minute. First of all, we played two negative ads produced for the Obama campaign so far against Romney, and one Romney ad against Gingrich and the historical Willie Horton ad. We also have the Johnson Daisy ad ready to go, and another one from Larry McCarthy. So I think we're being balanced in that respect.
Now, in fairness, Brian, you are giving examples on both sides. When you're talking about the quote-unquote unfair ads, we're only focusing on Larry McCarthy.
If I could speak to that. First of all, the story that I wrote definitely mentions, just as you said, there's nothing hidden. It mentions that Dukakis vetoed this measure that the legislature had. But and it also quotes a number of Republicans who felt, including Lee Atwater, that ad was below the belt. You see, you could make that ad without using a mugshot, and it wouldn't have had the racial aspect inserted into it. And that's actually what the Bush campaign did that year. They made an ad about the furlough issue without having a black face become the face of crime. And so, you know, part of it is what were the mores at the time. At the time, it was considered by all sides, Republicans and Democrats, to be inflammatory. And that's why Larry McCarthy tried to slide it by the stations without the mugshot in it first. He was very tricky about it, and so was the campaign. So, you know, I mean, you may feel this. I mean, I think it's a legitimate point, and it's interesting, and it's an interesting debate now looking back. The truth is that ad doesn't even seem that bad today compared to what we've seen since, because the standards have really gone lower and lower and lower. But race is a touchy subject, and making a black face the face of hideous crime in the middle of a presidential race is a choice that somebody made. In that case, the choice was made by Larry McCarthy,
and
very deliberately.
Subtext as well as text and emotional impact on voters. Keith, thank you for your call. And to Keith's question about, I think the implication there is a question about moral equivalency. And the article is mostly a history of Larry McCarthy's ads. Do you think that there is a lack of moral equivalency between Larry McCarthy working for Romney and whoever is making these anti-Romney spots that we've been playing for the Obama super PAC?
Well, it's interesting. The anti-Romney spot for the Super PAC that you played was made by a couple of young filmmakers who make trailers for Hollywood movies, basically, which speaks to a problem that the Democrats have, which is they don't have the I don't think they have a team that can go for the jugular with as much success as the Republicans have and the conservatives have had. There's certainly been plenty of attack ads made by Democrats, but they don't tend to be quite as successful or as kind of no holds barred. I'm not really sure why. They have different strengths and weaknesses, the two parties do. And the truth is that McCarthy's career, and the reason I looked at him, is not a career just with the Republican Party. It's a particular part of the conservative spectrum. He's almost always been with outside groups, groups that were the predecessors of the super PACs. And those outside groups that don't have to have a campaign name on them, don't have to have a candidate saying, I paid for this ad, those are the ones that really use the brass knuckles.
As your article points out about negative ads, the Republicans may be the masters at waging political warfare this way today, but the Democrats started it way back in 1964 with the granddaddy of them all, the so-called Daisy ad, supporting LBJ against Barry Goldwater, which begins with a little girl counting petals on a daisy.
6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Daryl. These are the stakes. To make a world in which all of God's children can live, or to go into the dark. We must either love each other, or we must die.
Vote for President Johnson on November 3rd. The stakes are too high for you to stay home.
Message, Barry Goldwater will start World War III. That started it, I guess, Jane, 24 years before Willie Horton.
I think that no ad has topped that one for overkill, really. To turn the screen into a mushroom cloud like that is kind of, I mean, it's the ultimate image that you can use at this point to take out an opponent. And nobody's really reached quite that level again of negativity. But there's a lot of negative stuff out there.
And I want to play one more example of a Larry McCarthy ad used against Democratic Congressman Bruce Braley, defeated for re-election in 2010 in Iowa, partly because of this ad that's actually based right here in Lower Manhattan, pretty far from Des Moines.
For centuries, Muslims built mosques where they won military victories. Now they want to build a mosque at Ground Zero, where Islamic terrorists killed 3,000 Americans. It's like the Japanese building at Pearl Harbor. The Muslim cleric building the mosque believes America was partly responsible for 9/11 and is raising millions overseas from secret donors. But incredibly, Bruce Braley supports building a mosque at Ground Zero. Tell Braley what you think.
And I guess there's so much untrue in that ad that it's hard to know where to start, but including your report that Braley never actually took a position on the Islamic Cultural Center.
That's right. You're right. There's so much wrong in that ad. And it's funny that it makes a point of criticizing secret donors, because that's an ad paid for by secret donors who haven't had to ever own up to having paid for it. McCarthy made it for a group called American Future Fund, and it was against, as you say, Bruce Braley. He squeaked by. He got reelected.
Oh, he did.
Iowa. Another person did not survive this experience. But, and as we all know, people who know New York know that was not a mosque. That's some kind of Islamic social center that was going to be built. It was not at Ground Zero. It was just in the neighborhood. And it was not built by the people who attacked us on 9/11. That was Al-Qaeda. That was not all Muslims. And so...
And it wasn't meant to be a victory shrine.
And it was not meant to be a victory shrine. I mean, that is described as the most egregious ad of the 2010 cycle by Jeff Garin, who's a Democratic opponent of Larry McCarthy's often, but they've also worked together on things and kind of have, admired each other's work.
With the creator of the Willie Horton ad as the attack ad mastermind behind Romney spots this year, if Romney's a nominee, do you expect things to do you expect racial coding to be used in ads against President Obama in ways that maybe didn't happen when John McCain was running against them in 2008?
You know, I mean, that's the third rail of politics, and I don't think there would be, I don't think Larry McCarthy specifically could go there without there being a tremendous hullabaloo. I mean, there'd be a hullabaloo for anyone, but for the man who made the Willie Horton ad, I think it would be a tremendous risk. I think what you can expect is killer ads, and probably on both sides now that Obama's kind of stepping up his fundraising with super PACs and an awful lot of negativity. It's entertaining in some ways, and some of the ads are actually informative too, but they have the end effect of so degrading the debate and making both candidates from both sides look so awful that it increases cynicism among the voters and decreases idealism, I think.
Jane Mayer, New Yorker staff writer, has an article this week called Attack Dog. The creator of the Willie Horton ad is going all out for Mitt Romney. Jane, thanks a lot for discussing it with us.
Thanks for having me.
Brian Lehrer in WNYC. And coming up next, we'll take your calls on living alone and talk to the author of a book about it. More Americans than ever are living alone and liking it.